We resume our deliberations. We're going to talk about the conceptual framework. I give the floor to Rachel.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. We have two papers to talk to you about today. The first one, Agenda Paper 10B, deals with the definition of income and expenses, and the second one, 10C, talks about information about financial performance and, in particular, the use of other comprehensive income. I'll hand you over to Joan to start on the income and expenses paper.
Right, good morning. There are two halves to this first paper, which is paper 10B. And the first half is about the definitions of income and expenses themselves, and then the second half is some further discussion of the income and expense definitions. The first proposal is on page 6 of the paper. The staff recommendation is that the conceptual framework definitions of income and expenses should be those proposed in the exposure draft. They shouldn't be changed. And the question is, do you agree?
No, I think we all agree. Yes.
So the second half of the paper, starting from paragraph 15, just talks a bit about further discussion, further material in the conceptual framework to support the definitions of income and expense. The exposure draft proposed not to carry forward the existing material in the conceptual framework. Now, firstly, we think that the board should confirm the proposal not to discuss the presentation and display of items of income and expense in the elements chapter of the conceptual framework. Having said that, we think that it might be useful to have at least some discussion of the different types of transactions and other events that give rise to income and expense. So proposing to take out all of the existing discussion was perhaps a step too far. We think including some brief discussion about different types of income and expense might be useful to help provide a more balanced discussion of the between the balance sheet elements of assets and liabilities, which have quite a bit of discussion about the different rights and obligations, compared to the elements representing the performance of the entity. So it might help emphasize that financial performance is equally important as the balance sheet. I might help demonstrate that the elements of income and expense represent real-world phenomena. They're not just mechanical kind of abstract concepts, purely derived from definitions of assets and liabilities. And it will also help explain the share-based payments transactions and how employee service is an expense, even though it might be funded by the issuance of share options. Now, we have illustrated what this might look like in paragraph 40. This is not final, of course, and it's just meant to give you an indication of flavor of what we might include as part of this discussion. And of course, it doesn't include points about how we might present or even recognize and measure these items of income expense. Does the board agree?
Manuel, in paragraph 25, you say the respondents suggested that the removal was perhaps a step too far. I mean, how many respondents was there? Was this everybody up in arms? Is this a few people up in arms? Or?
I think I did that analysis. No, it wasn't everybody up in arms. It was a minority. It was a reasonable group of respondents. I think there was it was sometimes the respondents who felt that we weren't giving enough prominence to the income statement in the conceptual framework, but it was also some respondents, often users and preparers of financial statements, who just think that the various items of income and expenses are are important and need further discussion. So there was nothing particularly specific that they were saying.
The respondents I was referring to in that paragraph were simply those summarised in the feedback from respondents in paragraph 17 to 20. So that was all I was referring to in that paragraph.
Because, I mean, I'm not really in favour of expanding this. I just wondered why we were reacting, you know, so heavily in this regard. And that's really why I was asking the question.
Philip?
Thank you. I support the staff approach. I think it's useful to have a little bit more flesh on the bones here. But when you say in your recommendation 39A that you propose to discuss some of the typical types of transactions, it's not really what you're going to do. I understand you are just going to list as examples, yes, but not really discuss in terms of explaining the...
Analyze.
Okay, so it's more a list of examples. Now, when looking at the list in proposed in paragraph 40, which is a long one, but if you make it a long one, I think one is missing, the effect of changes in translation, right? Translation adjustments create income or expenses. They are quite frequent. So I think that maybe we should not forget them if we try to have a kind of list which seems to be a bit exhaustive here, although we do not intend it to be exhaustive, but it's an obvious one which is missing from that list. And the drafting of your last proposal, paragraph 4XA, the last sentence, I do not understand what you really want to do. When you say issue equity, does not
meet the definition of income. That's, I probably need to complete that sentence.
Or is it income or expense? It would be income. Well, I think you need to complete the sentence so that it reads clearly, because I think I tried it several times. And
I agree, and as I said, this is just meant to be indicative. Of course, once we, and especially once we start to discuss some of the other chapters, for instance, measurements and perhaps presentation, we might come up with some additional drafting points to address this. But I would expect that this might change quite a bit during the drafting. I guess the key question we just want you to answer is whether you would want some discussion along these lines.
Okay, just another small point. Paragraph 4X, the sixth element, six. When you say enhancements of assets, including physical, functional, or technological enhancements, create income. Well, does that mean we revalue assets because of technological developments? I mean, assets most of the time are either at fair value or at cost. Could be impaired, impairment could be reversed, but it doesn't seem to me that we try to capture through measurements and then through income the physical conditions of assets all the time, or only through impairments and reversals, right? Because if an asset becomes more functional, or does that have any impact on the measurement of it? I'm not sure. I mean, I think it's going a bit too far here to say that enhancement of assets create income. I understand impairments do create expenses, but previous thing, I'm not sure.
Thank you. I agree with having those examples in the paragraph 4X. Having said that, the question remains, what is the appropriateness as an income or expense? So let's take an example of depreciation. We recognize depreciation because we would like to capture the amount of consumption which we can see in that period, rather than to estimate the value of the fixed asset at the end of the year. So then we try to capture what is the consumption amount. However, it is quite difficult to capture the consumption amount for the year. However, we would know what is the estimated economic life of that asset. So we know the appropriateness of consumption over longer period. So for the longer period, we know this amount of asset would be consumed completely. However, we wouldn't know what is the appropriate for each one of the year. So then when we talk about the income-oriented, in a sense, income-oriented asset balance, we have to discuss what is the appropriateness in longer term or shorter term. So we know the in many cases, we know the, in longer term, we would consume this. The question is how to allocate it. So we need to discuss such kind of things in this area, if possible.
I think, Tai, just a comment on that. What I was trying to capture here is just list out the types of economic phenomena that might give rise to income or expense. For instance, consumption would be one. Yeah. And of course, we'd have to think about how we might depict that through recognition and measurement. But the point is still that the consumption of the asset, it would be an item of income and expense that we would want to depict.
Yeah. Okay, Gary.
Thank you. I also agree with the staff's recommendation. I think a bullet list is helpful. I don't see any harm in doing it. Just a couple of tactical things in 4.x and little 4, to me, producing goods or other assets doesn't sound like something that gives rise to an expense. It sounds like, in fact, just say producing assets. So I would get rid of that one. I think on number 6, where you've got enhancements of assets, you know, similar thing, because there's maintenance also enhances an asset, even if it only brings it back to its original state and so on. Again, err a little bit on the caution. I mean, what's in a capital improvement versus what's maintenance is often, like beauty, it's in the eye of the beholder. And I would actually wouldn't mind seeing more examples of gains and losses as opposed to, ordinary activities, which I know you talked about elsewhere in here. We shouldn't separate between ordinary activities and other activities, but a few more examples of gains or losses would be helpful. Thank you.
Mary?
Supportive of trying to respond to the comments that we pared back, the material too far. I think the staff is right to point out that the change between current conceptual framework and the new one will be the inclusion of chapter on presentation, and so not to put stuff in the wrong place just because people are used to that. Having said that, I think what you said is we want to be responsive to having something in elements that makes it come alive a bit more. I'm not sure that the list we have in 4.x accomplishes that, because I think I think people probably were looking at manual more for what you said, but this is a guess, which is the types of phenomena that give rise to income and expense. And what you've listed here is activities, and you could get into some of the debates Gary just raised. Is that really generating income, expense, or creating assets? So good idea to respond in a focused way. This list feels a little long, and think about whether we do want to use a word without going into it, like gains. Impairment is the only one that seems kind of responsive to the tell me what can be in income and expense. The other thing is in 4XA, it struck me as funny drafting in another part, the second line, sometimes arise simultaneously. It you can read that as an observation about something that happens to happen coincidentally, and I think you're trying to raise a cause and effect relationship that sometimes the receipt is paid for in certain types of instruments. So yep. I think it's good to have something about this in here, but I think we need to work on the wording.
Yep.
Amaru.
Thanks, Ms. I'm also supportive of the being responsive for the feedback we received. I think it's a good idea. Whenever possible to clarify, I think it's very welcome. Paragraph 33 and 34, you correctly stress that is a list and a non-exhaustive list, or not too definitive list. In the proposal wording, you do not mention this. I think it's important to somewhere we mention that, because we do know how people read this, right? Yeah. They tend to limit to what is written. So it's one suggestion. I think there are other comments made before are worth considering as well in terms of providing the clarity that these people do expect, since there were not many, but I noticed that you stressed that mostly a significant number of users mentioned that, so I think it's important. On the draft itself, I don't think it's necessary. Only in 4X7, when reading, it's the first time you mention impairment, but you add other assets. So I was guessing, why not impairment of assets instead of assets?
Yeah.
You didn't mention before, but this is, I know you would spot this during drafting, so yes.
Hopefully.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, I'm sure you would.
On balance, I would not support that proposal for the following reason. Firstly, you know, this was the chapter people give less response in the past, you know. And that the condition already chapter is so, the already section is so simple, and then people not respond. And if we want to add more things, then people may respond, or respond differently. As we, a board member, some board members say, oh, like this, I don't like it. I like this expression, I don't like that expression. I think similar things will come back. I have a few reasons why. Not only because, you know, original people not respond so seriously. Firstly, the staff give one good reason, that is, try to give a balanced, you know, the presentation. And since we have examples in asset, therefore, you know, we should have, or we have discussed in recognition measurement chapter something, we should have balance. I don't see this is so convincing reasons to add. I have two more serious worry, that is, even though the staff said this is not inclusive list, you know, don't worry, this is only examples. But the problem is, you know, if we add examples, and people will ask, you know, why you add, why not add? Why you have this, why not have this? And you remember we discussed in liability once a time seven examples, and we're struggling whether we should keep or should not keep. And we once discussed some examples in the performance discussions about OCI. And we're also struggling whether we should keep this or not keep this. And at later stage, people always will feel, you know, I like this, I don't like this, even among board members. And this is my second reason, you know. Ad may have benefits, but ad may create, you know, some problem. Lastly, you know, we are under a double entry environment, you know. Discussing income expenses, naturally people were linked to asset liability, the other side. The problem is, if we write exactly the same, like an image of the other side, people may say, why you know, the copy the other side, so, you know, duplications. And if we write differently, then people say, what do you mean, you know, why you are discussing something differently from the asset aspect versus from income expenses aspect. So balance, I'm a little bit cautious to add this at this stage.
Martin.
I agree with Wei Gu, because I also think we don't need that. Because we have definitions as asset liabilities, and we define income expenses as okay changes in that. So why having some examples? Because it is not an educational paper, it is a conceptual framework, and I don't think in a conceptual framework we need examples what income expenses could be. I think that is very clear, and therefore I think for me it would be better, I mean, if we can save some pages in that, and not if that it would be more beneficial than adding examples what income expenses could be. Everybody knows that.
Sue?
I don't think I feel strongly actually about the list. I think my concern though with the list is it's so long it looks inclusive. all-inclusive, sorry. And if I look at the list, there's nothing in here, for example, that captures concepts like time value of money that I can look at and see, and I would have thought that would be a pretty key one for people to understand as fundamental in our conceptual framework if we are going to have a list. And also impairment, other assets. This type of impairment here doesn't capture our sort of FI concept of impairment either, so it's sort of income and expenses, except if you think of FI, which I don't think is great.
Stephen?
I agree with Martin that it's not necessary, but I'm not going to object to it. If people want it, fine, let's put it in. But if we are going to put it in, let's make sure that they really are income and expenses. And is three in the list an expense? Yeah. It seems to me you credit cash and debit liability, and I don't see where the expense comes from.
Right, it's not incurring liability, maybe an expense.
Well, it might not be an expense, but we recognize income when we fulfill performance obligations, for instance. But
not settling.
Subtle.
Maybe the cash.
It's a bit subtle, I think.
Yeah, it's subtle.
Example should hit over the head.
And where I hear this conversation, I wonder how wise it is to include a list of examples. Gary?
No, what I'm going to ask won't hurt or help if the list should be there, but a couple questions are on the appendices for some things you rejected. There's just two. Start with A2. Does not include transactions with holders of equities, but when you go to the second part of that about control in other ways through the related parties, that's not all that well understood or developed in our literature or anybody else's. So I actually think there probably would be some benefit in talking about it. And I think you mean the word complexity, not complicity, in it. But so I'm not sure I agree with the suggestion, but I'd like to hear why it was rejected, because it's just not a well-understood thing, you know, with control through other means.
It's a new concept. It's quite a new concept.
Yeah.
Which
and
is interesting.
Assuming that would be useful, you know, is to have, but I wouldn't lay in the tracks for it, but I'll just ask, you know, either Joan or Manuel to talk to it.
Well, one of the things I wondered was, the suggestion wasn't that we have concepts to discuss control that's exercised in other ways. The suggestion was that the definitions were amended to exclude not only contributions from holders of equity claims, but transactions with other parties that exercise control with the entity in other ways. And one of the things I thought was, would these other parties, if they don't have claims, how could they be having contributions and distributions to them that should be excluded? So I just couldn't see why there would be anything that would ever be captured by that.
It may be.
So that was where the complexity, not complicity, but yeah, complexity.
I didn't say necessarily easy to write one or two sentences, but it was just sort of, just seem like that might be useful to have, you know, because it's just not all that well understood from Mary about controlling transactions with people control you through means other than ownership. So I'm not going to track, so it's a little more of a question. Then the other comment I had is on B8, and it's really more wording than anything, and it's dealing with matching, and you said it's not a concept in its own right. Well, matching is a concept in its own right. It's just not one we've picked for primacy. And I would just be careful. It's a widely understood phrase. Just say it's just not a, doesn't allow a primacy, you know, our conceptual framework. It's just a way to describe it.
I think we were saying not that matching could be a concept.
Well, it is a concept, not could be. It is a concept. It does exist.
It is a concept, but it's not a concept that we have in the conceptual framework. We describe it now only as an outcome of applying the concepts, rather than as a concept that is applied in our conceptual framework.
No, I just think we have rejected in our conceptual framework. It's still widely referred to as a concept.
Yeah.
It's deep in accounting and auditing literature globally. I'm just saying is we have not picked it as a primary objective or concept for us. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's worth saying. I know the FASB's version of the stuff says that.
Okay, I'm firmly with Weigu and Martin. I think this is an overreaction. I think we're going to have lengthy debates on what goes in and what doesn't go in and what examples should be there and what shouldn't be there. I don't think it's going to add anything to the document except volume. And I've been authorised to say that Hans agrees with me.
You mean it's an EG, not an IE or something from the
I don't think we should put examples. I take Martin's point completely. I don't think we should have the examples in the conceptual framework. This is not a discussion paper.
But I guess that my only reaction to that, Ian, would be, I mean, the examples that we were proposing, I mean, they already appear in other places. And so we were just bringing them together, for instance, from the measurement chapter, from the presentation chapter, and just having them all in one place. So it's not something that...
Well, I'd leave them where they are. I think making a list like this is not a good idea.
Maybe if I could add to what Manuel just said, I think it's quite helpful, and one of the reasons why we suggested to add some discussion about income and expenses in the elements chapter is because it makes sort of the logic and the drafting in subsequent chapters much easier. So for example, the way we discuss presentation of income and expenses in the exposure draft, we were forced to link this discussion to measurement chapter. So talking about income and expenses, we had to refer to assets and liabilities, which was a bit cumbersome and counterintuitive. So by having some discussion of income and expenses per se in the elements chapter makes it much easier for the presentation chapter. So that's another argument why we thought it would be quite useful. And maybe it's not examples, maybe it's more sort of high-level discussion, but some sort of discussion could be.
I think we're going to get into a big debate, whatever you do. It's already, we've got an example around, examples around the table now, what people think should be in and shouldn't be in. And we've got to get on and complete this thing and get it done, and adding stuff that's not really necessary doesn't seem sensible to me.
Could I add to what Manuel and Julia said? Because we've got discussion in the later chapters, for example, in recognition and measurement about decisions and how important it is that when we're taking decisions about recognition and measurement, we consider the nature of the income of the information that's being produced about assets and liabilities and about income and expense. And we've got some discussion of that already in those individual chapters. But I think the team's feeling was that pulling some of that forward into the elements chapter was a more logical place to have that, really. It provides a clearer base for the subsequent discussion.
It's not really a point that was made very clearly in the paper.
Mary?
Well, I was thinking about kind of the inverse of what the staff was saying. Manuel, if we want to respond, you know, if the staff believes it would be helpful to respond with a bit more, but you're hearing from the board, let's not just insert a list of examples. Should you be saying that examples of some types of income expense along with their presentation is discussed in Chapter X? And, you know, just make the link that way rather than doubling up.
Would that be a suggestion? Well, let's see who can support the staff recommendation.
Six.
And Mary's suggestion? If it works.
The one who supports staff should support Mary. Because it's exactly the same, just geography.
I don't think people sit down and read the front to the back.
Yeah.
Put your hands up again.
Simultaneously, if we could want to.
Subject to review.
We'd have to look quite carefully at that as to whether a cross-reference would actually work within the context, but
we'll have a look to see whether we can make it work.
But if it can't, I read the vote is we won't do it, is that?
Yeah. Okay. Next paper. Julia.
Thank you, Hans. So in April, the board discussed the way forward on property loss and OCI, and decided that the conceptual framework should include high-level guidance on reporting financial performance. The board also decided that that high-level guidance should be based on the proposals in the exposure draft, adjusted for the feedback received. At this meeting, we would like to first talk about profit or loss, then talk about the usable CI, and finally about recycling. Profit or loss is discussed in paragraphs 5 to 24 of agenda paper 10C. The exposure draft proposed to describe profit or loss as the primary source of information about an entity's financial performance for the period. Some respondents agreed with the proposed description. Some respondents asked the board to provide more guidance or to define profit or loss. Only a few respondents thought that description of profit or loss is unnecessary or even inappropriate for the conceptual framework. The board has already considered requests to provide more guidance about profit or loss or to define profit or loss in developing the proposals for the exposure draft. And we think that the feedback received on the exposure draft did not provide the board with any additional insights that would enable the board to define profit or loss at this stage. We also know that some respondents stated that the proposed description represents a step forward, and we therefore think that the board should reaffirm the proposed descriptions. Description. The exposure draft also described the purpose of profit or loss, and that discussion led to certain concerns and questions, and in particular, why the board sets out an objective for one financial statement, but not other statements or notes. And we think that in proposing the description of the purpose of profit or loss, what the board really intended to do is to highlight that information in the statement of profit or loss has both confirmatory and predictive value, and therefore it is not possible and it is not appropriate to look at just one, to distinguish between profit or loss and OCI by looking, for example, just at the predictive value or, let's say, realization of income and expenses. However, we also think that the proposed description of purpose of profit or loss essentially just reiterates the objective of general purpose financial statements, and therefore arguably is unnecessary. And we also know that the proposed description of the purpose of profit or loss could arguably equally apply to OCI, and therefore we recommend that this proposed description is not retained. Question one for the board is set out after paragraph 24. Do you agree with the staff recommendation?
Let's look at the summary of recommendation and one items. I understand the why we like this way, but you know, I have a little bit of concern. That is the, which one? The G.
Wait, but just to be clear, so far we're only talking about 4A.
Oh, sorry.
First recommendation about describing profit or loss as a primary source of information about performance for the period. So that's first recommendation. And the second, do not discuss purpose of profit or loss in the presentation chapter.
Question one. Oh, sorry, I go further.
See, the first part of the question, which is to keep the definition sort of as it is. Who can support that?
Question one.
It's not the definition. It's not the definition. It's a it's a purpose.
I say sort of definition.
Yeah. Which is as good as you can get.
One observation.
Yes.
My last opportunity to make one last observation.
Keep back from the edge.
I think the observations, the comments that we received around
the idea that if you're not providing a definition of profit and loss, but at the same time you're going to make the assertion that the statement of profit and loss is your primary source of performance, collide, okay, number one. Mm-hmm. Two, we say later on that, you know, users, investors, etc., need to look at all sources of economic resources and claims in order to essentially evaluate the returns, you know, of a reporting entity. And so I think we it's incumbent upon us to either define profit and loss or not say that the statement of profit and loss is the primary source of performance. It's one or the other. Because if you say, gee, you know, no one gave us any good ideas, so we throw up our hands and we're just not going to do it, to me that doesn't sound like thought leadership. So I think you've got a conundrum on your hands. I think you do one or the other, but I don't think you just throw up your hands and say, it's too hard.
I'm not saying it's too hard. I'm saying it's impossible. Okay. And the second part of the question, do we need to discuss that? That's so, which is to...
Not to discuss.
Not to discuss. I agree with you, where you end up is the general description. Yeah?
Which one? Discuss or
not? Do not discuss
one
the
B.
purpose.
1B.
Yeah. 1B.
Should not we, in the basis for conclusion, say that it's more something that pertains to a project on financial, on reporting financial performance rather than the framework itself? I think we have to acknowledge somewhere, we need to do some work on the primary financial statements. And when we do that work, we need to know why we do it and what we do and what is the purpose of each of those statements. It may not be part of the framework, I agree, but it pertains to some other projects on reporting performance. So I think maybe the basis for conclusions could acknowledge that it's part of something the board should be doing, but at a standards level more than the conceptual level.
I certainly think that having some discussion of the fact that some of the detail of profit or loss might be better sat within a sort of standard level project is something you could perhaps mention in the paper.
Did we have
certain
isn't the purpose of the statement of profit or loss to show profit or loss?
Well, that's not
going to
be a helpful statement.
We can make things
up. Smaller than that. Otherwise, we would have only one line. But we have many lines before we get to profit and loss. And you explain revenue, expenses, etc., etc. This is the purpose.
Someone used OCI if that was the purpose as bluntly as that.
Okay, I stand corrected. Stephen.
Philip makes a good point about our project on primary financial statements. And I kind of reluctantly agreeing to this first question, but I really think that the answer to all of this is looking at the statements of performance in a more holistic way. And I'm very nervous about baking in this P&L primary measure performance in advance of having a more holistic discussion about reporting performance. So, I mean, I'll go along with it, but just to register my dislike for this whole approach.
You're disquiet.
Great war.
I can suppose Philip's 30%, not 70%. It's because if we won't say so, should we link to IS1? Should we link to discuss? I'm not sure we finalize the disclosure part. We once discussed the similar issues in this disclosure project. But I think, say it is, you know, standard level issues I will agree with, but you purposely link to an open-ended project.
But we
solely, I'm not sure it's a good idea. This is why I said 30%. I agree.
But
if you don't say so, we have to link IS1 because IS1 have discussion about the purpose or the objective of different kind of financial statements. And we finished all exposed disclosure initiative discussions about similar issue too.
But we know and we acknowledge, we go that this framework is not the end of the life. We will have to do work on equity liability and that will be acknowledged in the basis for conclusions or an introduction to whatever we publish. This is a framework which is as best as we can do at this stage, but we have some more work to do on some areas. Performance, maybe OCI someday, equity liability, and maybe some other. So just to acknowledge that we have not solved all the issues at this stage, and some of which are part of standards level development. Equity liability is a standards level project, in a sense. Performance, primary statement is a standards level project. And just to acknowledge that we have not ignored, because if we are totally silent, we say, oh, those people have just done work and they just ignore some problems.
Yeah. Okay. Can I see who agrees with the second part of the question?
1B.
1B. Yeah.
13.
Okay. Continue.
The use of OCI is discussed in paragraphs 25 to 51 of Agenda Paper 10C. The exposure draft proposed a rebuttable presumption for the use of profit or loss because that statement is primary, and also proposed some high-level guidance about when OCI could and could not be used. Many respondents to the exposure draft felt that the proposals would not provide sufficient guidance to the board or that they lacked conceptual basis. However, some respondents specifically stated that the proposals represent a step forward. In addition, most respondents did not object that OCI could only be used for changes in current values of assets and liabilities. Some respondents asked the board to clarify what enhancing relevance of profit or loss means, and some also stated that in classifying income and expenses, the board should not only consider relevance of information, but also faithful representation. Finally, some respondents stated that rebuttable presumptions as a mechanism is not appropriate for the conceptual framework and should be replaced by a principle. We agree with those respondents who state that rebuttable presumptions are not appropriate for the conceptual framework, and therefore we recommend that the conceptual framework includes a principle rather than a rebuttable presumption, according to which income and expenses are included in profit or loss unless, in rare circumstances, there is a good reason not to do so. We also recommend that income and expenses could only be included in OCI if they represent changes in current values of assets and liabilities, and only if including them in OCI would enhance relevance or faithful representation of information in profit or loss. Finally, some respondents were unclear whether only the board can make decisions about classifying income and expenses in profit or loss or OCI, and therefore we recommend clarifying in the conceptual framework that only the board can make such decisions, and in making such decisions the board would need to explain why including an item of income and expense that represents a change in current value, why including that item in OCI would enhance relevance or faithful representation of profit or loss. So the question for the board is after paragraph 51. Do you agree?
Sure.
I'm okay. It's a love, but I'm okay with what you've proposed here, and I agree with what you propose. I think it's good not to use the word rebuttable presumption, and I certainly think it's good that we're clear that only the board can make this decision. One suggestion, which I think is consistent with the staff's intent, but I think the wording matters a lot because people, I think, didn't focus on it as much as I certainly had intended in the exposure draft, and that's the wording of what you've got in B, question 2B on page 16. Mm-hmm. I think what we're saying is that the only circumstance when we think things should not be in P&L but should rather be in OCI because of the primacy of P&L is if it would enhance the relevance of profit or loss. Yep. So I think we need to actually say that. At the moment, B doesn't actually say that. It's what we mean, I think, but it's not how I would necessarily read the words. So I would prefer it if it said that we can decide to put things in OCI, current value changes, if it would enhance the relevance or faithful
could
representation.
Could be enhanced, it's too weak, yeah.
Yes, if, okay. but only if. If it would enhance the relevance of or faithful representation of the information provided in the statement of profit or loss. And then we can say we expect that to be rare, but I'd put that as a secondary thing. I think we need to say that's the only time we're going to be doing it. And also I think it's important not to lose the word for the period. So I think it needs to enhance the relevance of the information provided in the statement of profit or loss for the period, because particularly if we're going to say basically we always recycle, it's always going to turn up in there somehow, sometime. So the period matters a lot, and we had that in the ED, but it seems to have been dropped here.
Stephen?
I think we've got too many contradicting principles, both here and also in the recycling. So we have a principle that P&L is the primary measure of performance. And we also have a principle that all income and expenses are included in profit and loss. And I don't see how the two can live together. The principle is everything is in P&L. Well, that's the principle. The principle is that we don't include everything in P&L because we don't think everything is going to contribute to P&L being the primary measure of performance. Then we can't. Then that's the principle, and we can't have a principle of including everything in P&L.
I think what we intend as a principle is that income and expenses are included in P&L except for and only if they can go to OCI.
Make it into one.
Mm. Then we can
make it into one principle. In principle, everything goes in P&L except in the circumstances that putting it in OCI would.
But is that a principle? The principle, surely, is that you put things in P&L which are relevant for P&L being the primary measure of performance.
That's what we intend.
I think it certainly underlines that.
Well, this combination of A and B creates what you want. That's the outcome of coming in.
Third is a principle, because then I think we have to justify getting it into OCR. Yeah. Personally.
Ian?
Yeah, I quite like what's been written. But you have to understand I start from paragraph 29, which is, I'm one of those people who think we should have a single statement. And we should. I agree with the sentiments in 29, and we haven't gone that far, but we've gone a fair way. And if we get to paragraph 36, we say OCI is just an example of classification. So we've got one single statement. We classify things in various ways, and one of the ways we can classify them is put them in OCI. And that was in the exposure draft, which I didn't realise. And I agree with that. So having said that, we then go into great length about how we use that example, which is just an example. And that's all right. I kind of agree with the conclusions. You say in 42 there's no single characteristic or set of characteristics that you can pick on, but then you go on later and say that actually changes in the value is one characteristic we could pick on. So you've kind of contradicted yourself in the paper, I think. But that doesn't matter either, because I'm happy that if we just... If we want to pick out that the change in value and put into OCI, and we put the stipulation that it's got to make better relevance or faithful representation, then that's fine too. And then I also agree that only the board can do that at a standard setting level. So I'm in general agreement with the direction. I just think we're overplaying the importance of OCI.
Ian, can I ask you a question?
On the way through.
You started your discussion by saying you are more in the camp of those in paragraph 29.
Yes.
I'm in complete agreement with you on that one. Okay.
So I have to worry about that.
My question for you then is, how then can you then turn 180 degrees and say, I'm sanguine with all the other stuff and the recommendations of the staff? They're completely diametrically opposed.
Well, because I don't think we'll get to a single statement while I support it. So it's pragmatic. And it's saying if we're not going to have it, here's the rules for one classification we can make. And it says this is just one of many classifications you could make. You can make OCI and P&L. Well, you can make OCI one of your classifications. And here's the rules. If you want to do that, you can only do that for these particular circumstances. You can only do it if it enhances relevance and faithful representation. And only the board can do it at a standard setting level. And I think that's enough conditions around to make me happy.
Thank you. I think Sue made a very good point. She said period matters a lot. Suppose if we are asked to prepare the reporting period, which is 100 years, I don't think we need OCI at all. However, we are asked to report 1 year period financial statement, which is the income statement. And actually, we have to divide terms. So on the other hand, transaction actually go beyond 1 year. There are a variety of transactions go beyond 1 year. And when we talk about recognition and measurement, we measure it as a unit of account of that transaction. We do not really care how long it will last. So then the standard itself talks about just the nature of those transactions. So then when it comes to the presentation, then we have to divide it. So say for example, depreciation, we allocate straight line basis. For example, cash flow hedge, we put it in OCI and recycle it back when the actual cash flow meets the hedging instrument. So therefore, we need to discuss a little bit more about timing and period allocation. And then we can understand what is the OCI is all about. And it will lessen the pressure on the OCI recycling issue.
Mary.
Sorry, a few things. I was trying to look back at the ED to answer one of my own questions, but I can't. First of all, I think I'm more with Ian than Pat, and it's perhaps the pragmatic response in terms of how far do we think we're going to get. But there is, I think, some tension between the different statements about primary, but not dismissing OCI as irrelevant to reporting performance. And so I think we should have some observation about the importance of OCI as well, but I don't think we should have a long, expansive discussion, which seemed to be the suggestion in the paper. So I'd say keep it tight rather than broad. The second thing is, I can't remember if the exposure draft itself talked about both relevance or and faithful representation.
Relevance.
Okay, so that's something that the staff has added here. I wasn't convinced by the discussion in the paper about how faithful representation comes in as a separate consideration. I think maybe what I'd say to the staff, rather than trying to nail this down right now, is to either go back and think about whether we're talking about the usefulness of financial statements, because I think we say useful equals relevance plus faithful representation, or whether we really did mean and should continue to mean to focus only on relevance, because I've only kind of thought through it in the context of relevance. And while there's some paragraphs here about faithful rep, I'm not sure I got what the significance would be. So that's a question. Another kind of wording / language point is, I think that you have set up in the section the idea of OCI as a classification issue. And I'm trying to recall whether we had characterized report, OCI items as a classification when we did the ED. Okay. And then last is, I agree that it should be only the board who can specify when items are either permitted or required to be recognized, to be classified in OCI. I'm not convinced yet that we need to say it in the conceptual framework, because IAS 1 says you can only recognize something if the board permits or requires. Every entity has to apply IAS 1, and even if they have one of those now rare transaction types, for which there is no relevant standard, and so they're looking at the conceptual framework, they still have to apply IS1. So I think I would be minded to just say, we, in the basis for conclusion, we had this comment, we don't need to address it because the current requirements in the standard say that you can only do it when the board has specified a permission or requirement. I think that's what we did before, but I don't know why we would respond if IS1 is clear. It almost raises questions about whether IS1 is determinative.
If I could maybe quickly respond, and starting with the last point. As you say, Mary, this is exactly what we've done in the exposure draft. We discussed that only the board can make those decisions in the basis. But what I found quite striking in reading comment letters that actually some of the respondents interpreted the proposal that preparers could also decide whether to put things in P&L and OCI. And I think maybe part of the sort of contributory factors to this confusion is that everything else in the conceptual framework is not just for the board. Everything else in the conceptual framework is for the board, is for preparers, is for all the interested parties. So if we just talk in the conceptual framework about when OCI can be used without saying that this is just for the board, then arguably one can read conceptual framework.
But we are very clear, not just for this point, but for everything, that the conceptual framework does not override the requirements of the standard.
Sure.
So if we've said in IS1 that explicitly you can only use OCI if permitted or required by the, you know, by a standard, I don't see why we have to say it again in the conceptual framework. It kind of feels like this is saying, and this means you, Yulia, it applies to you too. You know, I'm not dead set against it. I think we should think about communications and education rather than writing every you can't do this into the conceptual framework.
John Wu.
Thank you. I generally agree with your steps recommendations. It's very good analysis. May I ask about one question on paragraph 45? You are suggesting that we are going to add another qualitative characteristics, that is a faithful representation in addition to relevance. So that's a good idea. However, I'm not sure these two examples in this paragraph are related to that faithful representation. So if we just say faithful representation, maybe under our defined elements, and some general principles of recognition. So in the case of cash flow hedge accounting, the hedged item might not satisfy some definition of our elements and something and so on. So you are saying in such a transaction, if we just recognize cash flow hedging instrument, then you are saying that's incomplete and misleading. I understand that's correct, but this incomplete and misleading is related to faithful representation? You think so?
Yes, that's what we thought, yeah.
What we were looking at there was that when we discussed accounting mismatches, essentially, which is what the hedging example is an example of, in the conceptual framework, we talked about them in terms of, in the recognition and measurement chapter, we talked about those accounting mismatches in terms of faithful representation, and it seemed to us that quite a lot of the uses of OCI that we have often are about accounting mismatches, so it seemed very odd that all we did was refer to relevance when talking about the use of the OCI and not faithful representation as well, since we'd identified avoiding accounting mismatches, if you like, as being part of faithful representation.
That if you use match or mismatching concept as a Garrett in the beginning to talked about that issue with Joanna, matching sometimes we understand the objective of matching is creates a different outcome in terms of accounting, rather if we just insist on the definition of some elements, asset, liabilities, and so on. So the two things are different.
Yeah. I think what we're talking about here are artificial accounting mismatches, so something that we are artificially creating a mismatch because of either the recognition or the measurement rules that we're applying, and I think that's a little bit different from the matching concept that we were talking about in terms of income and expenses. So I think there is a difference there. Perhaps accounting mismatch is an unfortunate term, but to me it seems that it's a different thing.
Exactly. Martin.
Only a small one. Question B, I think it says, explains that in rare circumstances. I don't think it is rare, and I'm not sure if it should be rare, because currently it's clearly not rare, which we currently have in our standards, and I don't know if we come to the conclusion that in future it is rare. And maybe before we have done really the financial statement presentation project, I would not say in the framework it should be rare. I don't know. Because currently it is not rare, and we have not discussed, okay, if we would discuss it again, would it change? Because currently we do it in standards we have issued is in 9 we have said OCI, in insurance we will have said OCI, and I would not say it is real. In some, we would say in some circumstances relevance, and then we can do that, but if it's real, I would not conclude that.
Maybe just a couple of quick observations to respond. So, like, first of all, we're saying that the idea of saying that OCI is rare logically sits together with the idea of P&L being primary. So that's my first observation.
I don't see that relationship.
And our second observation is that whereas it is true that in some recent or ongoing standards we did use OCI, but if we look at all sorts of types of income and expenses, it's very few that actually go to OCI, and all the other types of income and expenses go to P&L. So just
but almost every company has OCI.
That is true.
Yeah, something. I can see Martin's point. I've always, in my speeches, I've always talked about there should be a high hurdle for the use of OCI. And that's not something that works in this case, in the conceptual framework. But perhaps the staff can think about another word. It's rare. I still see OCI as exception rather than the rule. The rule is so perhaps exceptional would be better. Yes, we have exceptions, but we have quite a few exceptions in the country.
But we have exceptions when we think it is adequate. If that is real or not, is that the main point?
Yeah. Okay, problem solved. Yeah. Wei Guo.
I'm sure I'm the minority, but I still want to repeat my disagreement to have C. That is, the only board can decide for the following reason. First, I fully support what Ian quoted, paragraph 29. You know, I always feel, you know, we should, as board in the conceptual framework, should express, you know, there is different classification of income expenses. Revenue gain is one way, OCI or not is another way, and we should not be so rigid. And secondly, if you trace back the history of FSB's standard setting, you know, as we know, originally in the FSB's conceptual framework, there's no OCI. The reason why later on create OCI is because both SEC and FSB specify what item should be extraordinary or not, and discontinued operation or not. They use out all these, you know, the opportunities. Then there are some others, so strange. People still want to have a strange presentation, then create a term called OCI. Then we later on say that there is no conceptual basis. I don't think such a rule-based endeavor will be a good idea for us. And certainly, my own experience long time ago when I was chief accountant, we once tried a similar way. You know, we tried to define items in the income statement in all of the subtotals, particularly those strange subtotals like extraordinary OCI, but later on failed. It's because, you know, as rulemaker or standard setters, we are able to, you know, to tackle all of the complicated situations. And lastly, again, related to the future project about performance report, I don't want to prejudge what outcome will be. I think the outcome, one thing is very simple. We need subtotals. I will fully agree with. But when staff discuss with me, I also strongly against the idea. That is, we should specify all the items In, for example, operating income, extraordinary, and OCR. I think it will be dangerous. And follow the same ideas. I don't support ideas to say, you know, particularly in the conceptual framework. It is only the board can do so.
Well, after this intervention, I think it might, I am more convinced that it should be said in a conceptual framework. And the only advantage of your proposal would be that non-GAAP becomes completely unnecessary because every preparer could put undesirable elements in OCI. And there would be absolutely, everything would become GAAP.
Now, Hans, I will not be in the board, you know, 1 year later. Let's expect in the future whether the board won't decide which item will be in. Let's assume we have extraordinary items. What specific item should be there or not? My prediction is if we want to do so, we will fail.
Yes, okay, but that, it will be very difficult. But opening, you're saying it's going to be so difficult, let's just give up completely. Because that's what you really do. If you open up OCI for everything that preparers want to put in there, you give up. You completely give up on the relevance of the statement of income.
No. That not means we will not provide principles
to
subtotals. But okay. Let's, you know, this, I say I'm minority. You know, I understand.
All right. You've heard, I think, some proposals for rewording here and there.
Can I maybe have a very quick go just to see if it captures what we've heard? So I think there was a request to maybe combine A and B, so it all sounds like one principle, and there was a suggestion that we replace rare by exceptional, and the suggestions that we make it clear that it's only if. So I think if I were to try and combine those things, I think it would sound that looking at page 16 of the agenda paper, I think we would say that the conceptual framework will not include a rebuttable presumption about the use of the statement of profit or loss, but instead set out a principle according to which all income and expenses should be included in that statement, except for exceptional circumstances when the relevance or faithful representation of information in profit or loss could be enhanced by inclusion.
All the periods. All the periods.
Well, circumstances does not work here, but you'll
all
find
the period.
Yeah.
Whose point for the period?
Julia.
Yeah.
Maybe the way I see this, the best way I see it, I guess it was behind Sue, is start with stressing that it would be relevant and faithful representation, and end with could be an exception.
To be exception. Okay.
Expected to be exception.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Okay. With these amendments, can we support staff's recommendation?
Are we just doing A and B, or are we doing?
If we took A and B together, and then took C separately.
All in favour.
We want to do C.
What's C again?
C is the board. Only the board can decide.
Okay.
It's saying in the conceptual framework that
I
think Michael was arguing with it.
I think it doesn't really hurt. It's not pretty, but it doesn't hurt. So I would be. Who supports the staff recommendation?
12.
I would have preferred the original wording for the reasons that Martin articulated, because in fact the use of the word rare resonates with me much more than exceptional. We already have 10 exceptions, and we're not going to go back.
Let's not repeat that. Okay.
I think we voted.
Go on.
Recycling is discussed in paragraph 5261 of agenda paper 10C. So the exposure draft proposed a rebuttable presumption on recycling income and expenses when doing so would enhance the relevance of profit or loss for that period. The exposure draft also discussed that income and expenses may not be recycling if, for example, there isn't appropriate basis for recycling, but that the absence of such a basis may indicate that items of income and expense should not go to OCI to begin with. So we received mixed feedback on those proposals, but generally many respondents supported recycling all or some OCI items. And also similarly with feedback on the use of OCI, some respondents stated that the board should consider not just relevance but also faithful representation, and some respondents were unclear that only the board can make decisions on recycling in setting standards. And finally, also some respondents stated that rebuttable presumptions are not appropriate and should be replaced by a principle. So accordingly, we recommend that a rebuttable presumption on recycling is replaced by a principle according to which income and expenses are recycled when doing so would enhance relevance or faithful representation of profit or loss for that period. And we recommend also retaining the idea that income and expenses may not be recycled if, for example, there is no appropriate basis for recycling, but the absence of such a basis may indicate that those items should not go to OCI in the first place. And we also recommend clarifying that only the board can make decisions on recycling in setting standards, and in making those decisions, the board should explain why recycling would enhance relevance or faithful representation of profit or loss for that period. Our questions for you are set out after paragraph 61. Do you agree?
Yes, I think it's a big improvement. Amaro does not agree.
No, just one comment. I think that the direction, I do agree. It's just maybe a matter of I like simple sentence. So to me, I would just state, in principle, income and expense included OCI should be recycled. When doing so, would enhance the relevance and favor, blah, blah, and that's it.
Okay.
Anything else? And then only the board can decide. So I wouldn't see necessarily the necessity to have C, and I would mix A and B.
Mm. Not bad.
Mm-hmm. Just contemplating whether Amaro's suggestion fixes one of my points, but I'll start with the easier one first. In C, I think that might be useful just to encourage us not to always recycle, but for me, it's not just that there's no clear basis, because somebody might have a clear basis, which is that if I have a transaction on Wednesday afternoons, I'll recycle, which is a clear basis. But I think it needs to be a basis that enhances the relevance of. So I think we need a link between the basis and the relevance point. My other point was the interaction between A and B, and that's sort of what Amaro's getting at, I think, because when I read A, I thought, does that therefore presume that there'll always be a sort of, it will always enhance the relevance to have recycling, was sort of the presumption I read into A, which I don't think is what you mean. So I think maybe what Amaro suggested would address my point, or maybe the other way would be to say that in principle it's recycled unless recycling would not enhance the relevance, so which is more similar to the wording of the primacy of P&L and OCI. Because we say this is usually what we do unless it doesn't enhance the relevance or faithful representation by recycling.
In any particular period.
Yeah. So maybe Amaro's one does the same.
Maybe I'm going ahead of Steve, but I think we should combine A and B as we did in the previous question, because here we have the principle of something which is kind of an exception to the principle, maybe it's better combined. Regarding C, paragraph C of the recommendation of this question, I think, like Sue, I think the period is not the only criteria. You may very well know that you can recycle accumulated OCI for equity instruments in a period where you sell. You have a time indication, but you don't know how much is appropriate to recycle for that period. So I think it's either the period or the amount that could be a reason for not recycling.
Mary.
Funny, I had read the phrase about when doing so would enhance the relevance in a different way, because the word when can mean under the condition that, or it could mean a specific point in time. And I had read it as meaning you recycle, and sorry, the board will require recycling so that items are recycled in the period in which recycling will enhance, you know, the relevance, as opposed to we may or we may not, and we may, you know, we may or we may not. The times when we will are those times when we feel it will enhance the relevance. So I think you need to think about whether it's period or the condition that.
I read it as if.
Yeah.
That's how I read
it. Yeah, opposed to timing.
Yeah.
So it's and a little bit of both, but it does have an element of if. So you would not recycle if recycling does not enhance the relevance or does not enhance.
And
in practice, for people at this moment,
do it when we tell them.
Recycle a lot when it is not, if at the time that it does not enhance the relevance of the income statement.
They do it for at the point in time
bank,
we have specified.
Like
they have
banks,
to.
For example, who are now suffering in the loan portfolio, cashing in on equity investments that have accumulated over the years to embellish their earnings.
The other part, other comment is regarding C. Well, I understand / assume that we are putting that in there because, again, we want to point to the strength of the presumption about recycling, that if you can't identify a time, then it raises questions about, you know, your decision. But I feel like that, well, I want to emphasize that generic point about if you can't figure out a time to recycle, then it raises questions about whether it should be an OCI to begin with. I don't think that that rises to the level of a principle along one, you know, A and B or A combined with B. So I feel it's more an observation, a comment, than a separate principle that we need to set out as such.
And I guess the main question is whether that observation is actually included in the
It's almost more an observation about the frequency of OCI, you know, putting something in OCI to begin with, than it is about recycling itself. Because it's saying, if we can't figure out when it should be recycled in a world in which we are presuming that things will be recycled, it raises the question about whether it should be in OCI itself to begin with. It doesn't really raise a question about recycling. Just that it was going to Hans's point about there's a high hurdle for recognizing something in OCI. It's not really about recycling.
Steve.
Recycling is a test of.
To Philippe's point, I think we need to combine this because I read it as three principles. Principle that you recycle, principle that you recycle only if it enhances relevance, and principle you recycle when a basis can be identified. And I think we need to combine it in some way to make it more usable. The problem I really have with this, though, is what we mean by enhancing the relevance, because because this is guidance for us and future board members, and I think that's going to be interpreted very differently, even amongst this board. So I think some people will say relevance is enhanced always because we want clean surplus accounting. So we want P&L to be comprehensive, we want all gains and losses to be eventually reflected in P&L. Therefore, clearly, relevance is enhanced by recycling. And I would take completely the opposite view and say, well, actually, it's very rare that recycling will enhance the relevance of the performance measure in the period that recycling takes place. So take, for example, foreign currency translation differences. Somebody who thinks of clean surplus accounting would say, yeah, of course, I close down a foreign subsidiary, I sell a foreign subsidiary. Obviously, at some point, I have to recycle that foreign currency translation difference. I would say that recycling a foreign currency translation difference that happened in previous periods into current period performance does not enhance the relevance of current period performance. And I think we could both get to completely diametric views from exactly the same words. Yeah, but it doesn't help us. I mean, we'd be better off saying, we're not any better off having these words in the conceptual framework than we would be if we didn't have the words. We're still going to have exactly the same arguments that we've always had. So I don't think it helps.
We have not cracked the nut. We don't know what is performance, so how can we know what is performance?
It's not going to it's not going to resolve any of the problems that we've had for the last 20 years.
I think it gives a basis for discussion. And I think the ones who are going to say that this accumulated foreign currency translation gain or loss is relevant for this year, they have a big problem.
I think this tips us too far towards the presumption of recycling and the clean surplus accounting, and I just don't think it's the right direction to go. I think the right direction is Ian's, not baking in P&L with recycling.
If we add the reason for not recycling being the can't identify the period or you can't identify the appropriate amount, would not that limit a little bit the issue? Because the period is always easy to determine when you can recycle. In many cases, there is something which happens, which could be a basis for recycling. But if you cannot identify the appropriate amount for that period that would enhance the performance for that period, i.e. equity instruments, i.e. FCTA or whatever, then you could say, on that basis, I don't recycle. Because it doesn't, the amount I will recycle will not enhance the understanding of the performance for that period, and the words that Sue proposed, that period, are so important here.
Yeah, I think the inclusion of those three words for that period,
it is actually what I
gives, you know, leans much more in your direction than in the clean surplus direction, whatever that may be.
Those in bold, and I'll vote for it.
Well, in the basis for conclusion, I think you can say something about that. Martin.
I'm struggling with the second half in Z, which says, okay, that and explains that if no such basis can be identified, that may indicate that such income expense should not be. I think it may, but maybe also not. I think you can find examples. If you don't find a basis, is adequate, but if you don't, doesn't, because our core principle is that the P&L is the principal performance statement for the period, and therefore I think we should not have this second half of C, because it does not add, because it may, but maybe also not. You can have examples where it is maybe increases the relevance for the performance statement and you took it out of P&L, but you don't find maybe a recycle, but this could indicate that it might be not appropriate, but could also not, I don't know.
I was always in favor of these phrases, because it, in terms of, for example, the pension liability, the fact that you cannot recycle it in a sensible manner, does indicate that the decision to begin with was wrong. But it is, does seem to be a bit odd to put in, in the conceptual framework phrases that say, well, if we can't find a basis for recycling, probably the board was wrong to put the stuff in OCI to begin with. Anyway, Changwu.
Unfortunately, I have totally the same idea as Martin's and other board members saying. This kind of a lack of a recycling basis looks like another criterion to see, to use the OCI category. So the basis of recycling, but understandable, but do we need this kind of a thing, you know, lack of basis, recycling basis? That might affect too much on the classification of OCI. That's my concern. Too technical.
Thank you. Regarding the foreign currency issue, I agree that, you know, recycling a foreign currency differences in one period doesn't meet the relevance or faithful representation. I think it is a matter of a capital maintenance issue. But we are not going to discuss capital maintenance issues. So then somehow currently it is recycled, and that nobody think it meets the relevance and the faithful representation. So in this sense, recycling is something needed evil, which we might cope with. And actually,
necessary evil.
Necessary evil. Necessary evil. And actually, Steve made a very good point about clean surplus and presentation. And it is fine to define the what is the relevance about for the period. But we have to seek for the relevance for the longer period, say, for example, 100 years, 100 years profit and loss statement. So if we didn't recycle at all, then the profit and loss statement for the 100 years doesn't mean anything. So that's the idea of recycling.
Depends what's an
idea. Having said that, question is not simply just a binary debate like OCI or net income or something. If we could provide much better presentation, like I don't know whether extraordinary income or not or something is a good solution. However, if we could provide a much more well-structured profit or loss, which could be accepted by both management and investors, it could much alleviate the debate here we have.
Paragraph 29.
Yeah, exactly. paragraph 29. But current situation is we are only discussing this issue first without showing what we have in our pocket.
This is something that
This is something we definitely need to do urgently so that we could provide some strong.
Although have no illusion that even if we find a fantastic subtotal. Foreign currency, for the pension liability.
Yeah.
And it still ends up in the bottom line, which is profit or loss.
Yeah, of course.
A lot of people will, the opposition to such a proposal would still be extremely strong. Because it's, you know, the markets and the newspapers, they all focus on profit or loss, and the management is very keen on preserving what they see as the integrity of profit or loss. Wei Guo.
I support to remove the rebuttal presumptions, which I also suggest the period with developed ED. Agree with Mark, the Amalo. Not have seen, you know, and in my view, it is too specific because, you know, the whole idea is why we have OCI is, as we all agree, I personally not agree, that is put board in a position, we make decision. And I'm not sure whether have this or not have this will, you know, change board's future possible decision. And I personally don't feel it is, you know, appropriate. And as I also say, I not agree with, you know, the ideas. Only the board can decide. And linked to the debate, Taka just come, you know, his support like the 29, you know. And
not exactly 29, but, you know, come with our project.
In my view, you know, the non-recycled OCI can be labeled as OCI or can be labeled as ordinary items or maybe other labels. And I just feel, you know, we put us in a such a, you know, stranger positions, and we will be bargaining among ourselves and with our constituencies so fiercely in the future.
Okay, Julia, can you summarize, is it possible for you to distill some consensus here?
Yes, so maybe if we could have votes on like maybe four separate things.
Yeah.
So the first one would be a principle which would combine A and B on page 19. And so that would read that conceptual framework would not include a rebuttable presumption that income and expenses included in OCI in one period will be recycled, blah, 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 blah. But instead states that in principle, income and expenses included in OCI should be recycled. When doing so, would enhance the relevance or faithful representation of the information provided in the statement of profit or loss for that period. So that the first would be a combined principle of A and B. Can we vote for that to begin with?
Stephen, you just think about those three words.
In
fat.
And the period was there. And then on C, I think people had different concerns, so perhaps we could vote for the beginning of C and then the end of C. So who would support that the conceptual framework states that income and expenses included in OCI may not be recycled if, for example, there is no clear basis for identifying the period in which recycling should occur or the amount which should be recycled in that period?
Who can support
this? It needs to be linked to representational faithfulness, etc.
Yeah.
Anybody can come up with some reason to put it in
link
there.
With fish for
okay, yes. I probably cannot come up immediately, but like that bit with...
If it's linked to that.
Yeah.
Is that amendment?
10 in favour.
Okay. And then the last bit of C, which is, do you support that conceptual framework should state that if no such basis, if no basis for recycling can be identified, that may indicate that income and expenses should not be included in OCI to begin with? Who wants that statement?
That's a bit too far.
I don't think it's really
necessary. Fine, I'm just checking.
Well, we don't know
that. One.
I would support that.
Two? Okay.
Two and
take
ten.
A vote.
And then D as stated, essentially. Only the board can make those decisions.
All in, 13.
Okay, that brings us to the end of this discussion on the conceptual framework. Thank you very much.